production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
The Memphis City Council on budgets, MLGW, and much more tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by three members of the Memphis City Council, all recently elected. Rhonda Logan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Chase Carlisle, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
J.B. Smiley Jr., thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Along with Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. You are three of the six new members of the Memphis City Council, so congratulations on your win. And let's start with MLGW. There's been a lot of conversation about the rate hike, about funding, about TVA, and the future of MLGW as it relates to TVA. I'll start with you, you're right on my right. What is your take, I mean, on the rate increase that was recently passed and the deferred maintenance that MLGW argues it needs even more money to pay for, what's the right approach for City Council and MLGW?
Well, I think we have to look at it on a broad spectrum because we have to take in consideration some of the things that happened prior to President Young taking his position. So what happened, you know, MLGW expanded its infrastructure to the outskirts of the city while investing millions of dollars to the outskirts, but in the same time was not, you know, repairing or putting dollars into the existing infrastructure. So before this council, MLGW said that they had a study done that talked about potential catastrophic failure in some of the Super District 8, which is my district. And for me, it's almost apparent that we had to do something, had to take some steps right now. We couldn't just keep kicking the can down the road. And a slight increase could, you know, have infrastructure repaired sooner rather than later.
Are you, MLGW has a relationship with TVA, they get the electric from it, the power plant downtown, but they've talked about maybe looking at other providers of power.
Potentially severing ties, absolutely.
Yeah. Are you in favor of them at least, are you in favor of them severing ties or at least exploring other options?
Well, for me, it's all about getting all the information. There's been, I think, at least four studies done, talked about potential $100 million of savings if MLGW is to potentially sever ties with TVA. But, you know, some of those proposals are done by groups right. that have a financial gain. So for us to go through the process, us meaning MLGW and the city of Memphis, I think is absolutely necessary so that we can figure out what is best for the cities of Memphis.
Councilwoman Logan, your take on that, I saw you nodding at some of the answers that, Councilman Smiley had. Do you hear from your new constituents, but you were campaigning? I mean, is MLG top of mind for people or not so much?
Oh, definitely. MLGW is top of mind. And, you know, the increasing bills or the energy burden in Memphis is critical. That's one thing that I've noted to them during our conversations. However, you know, being new on the council, I've had the opportunity to actually meet and discuss with President Young and the other board members, and I attended the PSAT meeting, and there's so much more involved in moving to someone else and the rate hike and us needing to improve our infrastructure. I think a lot of times we folk as constituents and as citizens, we focus on the fact that the bills are high and that, you know, the energy burden is high, but we don't get an opportunity to see behind the scenes and what comes to play in that happening. And so as a city councilwoman, you know, it's incumbent upon me to make certain that my constituents are informed and that I communicate with them and let them know exactly what's going into the decisions that are being made. And like Councilman Smiley said, there are things that happen prior to President Young getting there, prior to us coming along. But at this point, this is where we are. We have to make those infrastructure improvements to mitigate ongoing outages and things that may come, like you said, catastrophically, that could be problematic for our constituents down the road. So I am in favor of the necessary infrastructure improvements.
Councilman Carl, you come from a development commercial real estate background in your day job. The one thing that, you know, we generally, and probably rightly, most of the customers of MLGW are individuals and families and so on, but obviously commercial real estate, commercial owners, it's a big economic development part of the puzzle. So one, how much does that burden and of the deferred maintenance hit the non-residential, the commercial customers, the office, the industrial, and so on? And then two, do you worry, TVA does a lot in terms of incentives and recruitment and business economic development issues. Do you worry that this talk of cutting ties with TVA could have some unintended consequences on that side?
Sure. So great question, right? In the commercial space, you know, I don't know that a lot of people know this, but consumers of higher than 5 kilowatts or 5 megawatts a year can buy direct from TVA. So our large industrial producers, there aren't many of them, can go and do that. A lot of times on the commercial development side, you're always watching your operating expenses. Obviously, real estate taxes seem to be, you know, they're a burden for our operators. And the utilities can run in, you know, around $2 a square foot for a large commercial office building. So I think in the grand scheme of things, the infrastructure improvements don't necessarily impact them. The cost might. But if you are improving the marketplace as a whole, making a more desirable place to live, the indirect benefit is that you're able to recruit and retain people. And I think they see the overall benefit to having the infrastructure improvements done.
Yeah, and on the TVA side, the role that they play in economic development, so on, do you worry that could get jettisoned to the detriment of Memphis?
You know, I mean, I think we could sit here and pontificate on whether that may or may not happen.
It is behind the headlines.
That's right. It is. I think for us, though, and both my colleagues touched on it, is you know, we are where we are today. How do we move forward, and what's in the best interest of our city and our citizens? And I think as Councilman Smiley said, I'm very process oriented. And I think for us to go down the integrated resource plan that MLGW is going down, getting the RFP and seeing what our options are out there, we'll have that discussion about how we move forward. Again, Jeff Lash made it abundantly clear in some statements that his offer is his offer. Chattanooga's recently signed
Jeff
up.
Jeff Lash being?
The president of TVA.
Yeah.
Right, so they may not even respond to the RFP. We won't know that until we get there, right? But for me, it's continuing to move forward through the process and not to delay that.
And it's a 5-year, there's a 5-year
time. Agreement.
It needs to be considered now is the argument, but it is not something that happens, you know, next year or something. Let's get Bill in the mix.
Councilman Smiley, I think you had some points on that.
Well, so I've met with the president of TVA as well, and he recently backed off some of his more direct statements in terms of standing firm on not negotiating with Memphis. He said, well, that's not what he was intending to say. And, you know, my position, when I think about TVA, there's other things that we do need to consider, whether or not we save hundreds of millions of dollars. TVA has community involvement. They, you know, I think put $70 million directly into our economic development in this city. And I think those are the things that we need to consider. So we have to take totality of the circumstance, take everything in consideration before
Absolutely.
Making a decision.
The council recently had a key committee vote. The committee votes that you all take are not binding on what the full council is going to do. But this one involved 12 of the 13 council members, and it was on the idea that the residency question, expanding the residency provisions for police and fire, will be on the November ballot after all. And we have different opinions around this table on that.
Yeah, I'll have different opinions.
Everybody does.
You can't debate residency. You can't get your council certificate until you debate residency.
That's right. This has come up a number of times, and there have been several city charter amendments. And so the city charter amendment is what will be voted on in November to allow police and firefighters to live within 50 mile radius of the city or in adjacent counties to the city. With a sunset provision that says after the police department hits a certain level of its complement, then this residency expansion no longer applies. So that's the nutshell version of it. So, Councilman Carlisle, should this remain on the ballot, and is this a good thing?
So I'll take the second part of that first. If we could, by ordinance, relieve the residency requirement, I would have been in favor of that. I'm certainly in favor of allowing the people, the citizens of Memphis, to decide that, if that's something they're interested in. I think if you go back, and I'm not sure there are many people that do or will, and you watch our committee meetings, there's a lot of great debate around it. I think ultimately the goal for us, again, as a council, is to make a better Memphis. And while I understand there are some concerns in the community about the perception and of having outside police officers in different neighborhoods that may not have grown up there, don't know it as well, I don't know that requiring people or binding officers in increments of 15, 20, 30, or 40 per class to live in Shelby County or the city is going to help move the needle in the manner in which we want to do, which is, you know, growth on a larger scale. And our biggest, one of our biggest issues as a city is public safety. So if I can start to address public safety first, I'm hoping that we can get more people to want to move into Memphis, including those officers themselves as they're exposed to the city.
Councilwoman Logan, in addition to making a decision to go ahead and keep this on the November ballot, the council also set up a task force, which you will be heading, that will continue to look at the issues of how police recruit people for this very essential job. So your take on this and residency in general?
Well, public safety is one of the number one things issues that I dealt with while campaigning, as well as throughout the listening tour. Residents want to be safe, and somehow they feel that having more police officers or potentially having more police officers will do the trick. My take is we need to look at all of the issues surrounding public safety and residency and retention and all of that, and make sure that we have enough voices coming to the table and speaking to this issue, because it's so layered. We do want to relieve all of the boundaries. You know, we want to make sure that we've given them enough authority to do what they need to do. I've always said I want to make sure that they're well staffed, well trained, and well compensated, our public safety officials. And so in doing that, being well trained and well staffed and compensated, it's a larger question. So we voted, and I will stand by that. I am always in favor of giving the residents the opportunity to chime in. However, I did note, and we're learning, you know, we're new, we're learning, and through the conversations that we, through the talks that we've had, I did recognize that oftentimes the constituents don't have all of the information to make a sound decision. So that was important to me as well. And sometimes we have to make those decisions when there's not going to be enough information for them to make an informed decision. That was another thing. So there are so many variables, and I think that we have to continue this conversation intentionally and deliberately and with a number of voices that can speak to all the aspects of it. And I know as a council that we'll come to a solution, and we'll, as a city, we'll do what's right by our citizens, because all of us are very people oriented and very concerned with moving Memphis forward collectively.
Can I just add to that? I mean, one of the other things here is, and we all agree on this, that more police officers doesn't solve all of our problems. It is not going to fix the crime issue and the poverty issue. Jeff Warren's, I think, gonna love this, but obviously, yeah.
You say it.
But I've read Thomas Happ's book. I mean, it makes some compelling arguments about deterring violent crime.
And we had a long conversation with Amy Wire, a district attorney, last week on the show about those very issues.
But right. And so my point here is that we also understand that these things are not mutually exclusive. We can give our police officers the tools in the toolbox to address public safety, as well as starting to address things like blight and generational poverty all together.
Let's get J.B. Smiley.
So I think my concerns may be a little bit different than everyone else. And I take a point of view in terms of just being a millennial, and I think about, you know, my generation coming up into the workforce, we're less inclined to apply for a job if we see some barriers. Now, Director Wallace is quoted as saying 1,000 times, probably more than that, that we have to remove all barriers so that we can have more officers, and we can have a fully staffed police force. Well, one of the barriers that we have not talked about, that majority of large police precincts and police departments from across the country who've been taking a lot of our officers, they've done something. One of the first things they've done, they relaxed the ban on tattoos. They relaxed the grooming standards. And what happens is you see an influx of millennials join these police forces.
I've never thought about that. That's really interesting.
Houston has done it. Dallas has done it. And a lot of our officers, when they leave the police force here, they go to those places, and guess what? They fall into my age group. So for me, if we want to truly be reflective of our city, if we want to be inclusive, we have to make sure that everyone feels welcome. And right now, the majority of the millennials do not feel welcome because, let me give you an example. If I go to the courtroom, there will be a lawyer standing to my left, may have tattoos. A lawyer standing to my right may have dreads, may have a beard. And that does not necessarily make them less professional. It does not absolutely make them less professional. We should be inclusive. We should say, come on. And that way, we will reduce the amount of officers who leave, and we also will increase the amount of officers in our city. And the reason that, you know, I voted the way that I did in the committee meeting is because Director Wallace said something that piqued my interest. He said, well, how about this? We relax the grooming standards, and you all allow this to go to ballot. Because I believe that if we relax the grooming standards, we will see an influx of young people joining up.
Back to Bill.
So when this hits the ballot in November, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, prior to November, I'm hoping that all of the council members get out and inform the constituents, and that we all, the city and everyone, really engage the community, engage the people, because this is really important. This is a very important issue, and I feel we're on the cusp of moving forward or being stagnant, and I'm confident that we will. One other thing, and I'm so grateful that we have such a diverse council, and just as Councilman Smiley said, there are so many options that we have. We didn't even think about that. Most of us didn't think about that when he brought that to the table. It was like, yes. And there's another area, the clergy police. Clergy Academy that they have. Well, there are like 400 clergy that go through this, and there's a church on every corner in Memphis. And so involving the clergy that come through to recommend a young person or a member of their congregation to be a policeman to go through, that's 400 right there. So, and that's a small, something that we can do in terms of engaging the community and having all of us work on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Will you go actively, talk to your constituents, encourage them to vote for this?
Well, I think I will actively engage my constituents. I'm not gonna, I think the whole point here is allow them to decide. I've made it abundantly clear what I think, but okay. I'm not going to try and persuade people. I think it's our responsibility to inform and let them make the decision for themselves.
With about 10 minutes left, let's switch to budget. Okay. We're at the beginnings of budget season. Obviously, it's new for all of you. You just recently elected. But I'll start with you. What are your priorities budget-wise that maybe haven't been priorities in the past? We can list a lot of things, but just pick one or two, like what you see as high priorities that need to change from past priorities.
Investment in the underserved areas. In terms of investment, I mean, we see the development that's happening downtown. Well, why not North Memphis? Why not Frazier? Why not South Memphis? I believe that, I'm currently, speaking to the director of planning, director of housing and community development about a potential development in the poor zip code in our city. And prior to me, I'm not sure if there's been anyone advocating for these communities. And I think when we look at the budget, what type of dollars that we have so we can say, hey, we're going to make an intentional investment in these areas.
You didn't have a chance to vote on it. Are you in favor of Memphis 3.0, which
am does I try to
identify some of those areas?
In the broad scheme of things, knowing that the council now has the ability to go back and amend it, I'm fine with putting some type of proposed plan together.
Budget priorities for you that might be shift changes from the past?
I mean, I don't know that when you say shift changes, first off, I think we've got to continue to be fiscally prudent. I think that's important for us. I mean, there was a nice detail in the CIP update, which is our capital improvement projects budget, that shows our debt burden. And if we remain fiscally prudent, in the next 5 or 6 years, that puts the city in a very financially sound position.
Yeah, they're estimating a $25 to $50 million
retirement of debt
that suddenly is available either for tax reduction or spending or wherever.
And there's all these things. Solid waste fee was very controversial, but the reality is we were loaning dollars out of the reserve fund in order to fund our operations, and that impacts our borrowing costs, which has a longer term impact for us. And it's all those nuances that at times is difficult to explain to the general public, but really impacts the well-being of our city. We mentioned 3.0. I think one of the things to both Councilwoman Logan, who knows her neighborhood, she's the executive director of the Raleigh CDC, is taking 3.0 and starting to figure out how we can go and execute on that. Mm-hmm. I've been saying this for a long time, and I agree with them. We've had a lot of success in downtown and midtown and other parts of the city. And now it's time to take that critical mass and hub and spoke and execute on the plan.
Priorities and so on.
Building on what he said, as the community engagement partner for Memphis 3.0 in Raleigh, that's exactly what we did. We didn't have a plan. There wasn't a particular plan. And I know at this point, I speak for the entire district, but then we were going through it just as that single member single district, Raleigh. But we brought everyone together to make certain that there were all the voices there, and that plan did include the things that we needed in the area. Saw it as an opportunity because we did not have a plan. Other communities may have had a plan that the community had come together on, but we did not. And so I saw it as an opportunity. And now that we have it, it includes the things that we wanted to see. It's easier for us to support it. But I do understand if other communities were not engaged that we need to go back and look at it. We still need a comprehensive plan for our city. And I think it's a great place to start, but we need to begin to put those other pieces together.
5 minutes left, back to Bill.
All right, as we record this show, you have all been through four meetings as city council members, a whole four meetings. And
it's a lifetime.
And whatever you knew about the council before, you know a lot more about it now. So tell me what the learning curve has been like over the last 2 months.
There's a tremendous learning curve. However, I am even more so now encouraged and motivated and optimistic about the city and our potential and where we're going and the opportunities for all of the communities. There's a great learning curve, but as I'm learning and as I'm peeling back the layers, I'm seeing so many things that are opportunities that maybe may not have been seen initially as an opportunity. So just getting to know the process and getting to work with the other council members and the administration, I'm very hopeful.
Okay, Councilman Smiley.
Oh my goodness. The very first day, day of orientation, I remember, you know, just every head of every department coming in, giving us information in about a 20-minute span. Here's everything you need to know about our departments. And I just go back to last year when I ran into Martavius Jones on a campaign trail. He mentioned it takes at least 3 years to learn what's going on the city council. And I was like, there's no way possible. And I literally said, they can't be true. And then first day of orientation, I said, I leaned up, I said, yeah. He was right. And it's a steep learning curve. And I think, I think this council, the reason I'm excited about this council, I think everyone is truly concerned with doing what's best for the city. And it will require all of us to, be intentional about learning everything. So
just put in the work.
Yeah, put in the work.
Yeah. What is your district? It's with
Super District 8.
And that covers?
Half of the city, from Whitehaven to Fraser, everything in between, including Hickory Hill.
Okay, and we talked about you're in Raleigh.
District 1, a small portion of Fraser, Raleigh, and Cordova, all the way up to the Fayette County line.
Okay, I should have done this early on.
That's all right. I'm Super District 9. I replaced Kemp Conrad. I get a sliver of Fraser, Raleigh, Cordova, East Memphis, Midtown, parts of Parkway Village down through Hickory Hill.
So you, like council members Logan and Smiley, you sat in on some of the meetings. Now you're actually in the chair. What's that like?
It's a heavy burden. I don't think I would ever stress out as much. The work never has bothered me, but even the smallest of the decisions can be very stressful because you want, you feel this heavy weight of wanting to always make the right decision and do the right thing. And have a lasting impact that's positive for the city.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And one good thing that we do have is the fact that we all come from a sector that we can rely on. Like, I'm community. I know most of all of the division directors. Even though there is a learning curve, that part I do know, and I can share that with Carlisle, and he can share, the legal aspect and the development aspect. So we work well as a team, and I think that makes it a little easier for us. It's not easy, but it makes it a little bit more comfortable in knowing that we have support, that we can lean on each other.
Absolutely.
And outside of being city council, you do what?
Well, lawyer.
Lawyer, okay. I think we talked about everybody else, but we hadn't touched
lawyer, on lawyer, developer, community.
Okay. We talked about development downtown. There's a lot of things going on downtown. The Sheraton is looking for some tax incentives to renovate and possibly expand their hotel, kind of in response to the Lowe's Hotel that's being built. Are you comfortable that, the city council is very involved in business development issues. Are you comfortable with where we're going?
Comfortable in terms of, it's a starting point. Comfortable in terms of right now, I do believe, downtown is booming, but for me, I just have to see that momentum expand to some of the areas that have not seen any progress in the past 30 years.
For you, I mean, the city, you're from that world. Your family's developing a big project on One Beale. I mean, you're from that world. But is it odd to be on this other side now, where you've got a fiscal responsibility, not just the grease the wheels for the business people responsibility?
Yeah, look, I don't think it's odd. I think you put a hat on, you do a job, and you do it well, and you do it right, and that's our oath to the office. Mm-hmm. It's the reason I recused myself from a vote that was a small consentagen item, just to ensure that people understood that that's where I stand. So. And I do think we're seeing growth. I mean, the mayor talks about it, but I wrote down some notes. I mean, we're going to see 1.8% across the largest 10 revenue sectors for us. We're going to see our local sales tax grow 4.7% this year, our state sales tax grow 5.3%. So we just, to the point, we have to figure out how to get that money back into the areas that are of most need.
Really briefly, you'll be voting on these incentives, Sheraton and others. Do you feel generally that the money has been spent wisely and tax incentives have been put out appropriately?
Well, I think there's always room for us to do better. I think there's always room for all of us to add our vision to it and our perspective to it and improve on what we're doing. But like moving forward downtown, we're responsible for making sure that that momentum goes into our community.
We could have done a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes on that. I apologize. Right. Thank you all for being here. That's all the time we have this week. Remember, you can get past episodes of the show on WKNO.org, or you can download a podcast of the show on the Daily Memphian site, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us.